Oh, sorry. Sorry. Sometimes these catheters can pinch a little bit.
That's Ben Stiller in the comedy Meet the Fockers. He plays a male nurse.
Well, thanks for listening. I really appreciate it.
You got a real gentle touch there, Doctor.
Actually, I'm a nurse. Doctor will be right in.
In our culture, we tend to have a very clear picture in our minds of who a nurse is and what she's like. And yes, the assumption generally people make is that a nurse is a woman. Where did this idea of nursing come from? And what's the real history of the profession? I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on KCUR's Central Standard, we're going to find out, starting on the battlefield. My first guest is Jonathan Casey. He's with us from the National World War I Museum, where they've currently got an exhibit called The Second Battlefield, Nurses in the First World War. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
What inspired this exhibition?
This is an exhibition that we have on loan from the Spencer Museum of Art at the University of Kansas. And it was came about through a large gift that they received of thousands of items, World War I items, artwork, and various things that they then created this exhibit of about 30 pieces or so based on nursing and the nursing profession. And
through all that material, I mean, this sounds like a huge collection of objects. What do you think caused nurses to surface as a really important theme and subject to address?
Obviously something that people, when they think of something as big as World War I, may not just even think about nursing so much. Just kind of people may be thinking about the fighting, but then there's those who served also who weren't in combat but were serving and helping out in various ways, and one of them being the nursing profession.
Explain the title, The Second Battlefield. Why do you consider nursing during World War I a second battlefield?
Nurses were serving not as in combatant roles, but right close to the front. So it's not the battlefield or the battlefront, but a backup kind of front. And they were serving in all kinds of positions and were in danger many times. So they're not in combat, but quite close to it and involved with what happens from the war front, from the battlefronts.
I went and saw the exhibit yesterday, and it's in the basement of the museum, and kind of you have to sort of go out of your way to get to
right.
This area of the museum. And I was pretty surprised at the number of people crowded around this, you know, somewhat
right.
peripheral, physically anyway,
right.
peripheral exhibition.
Well,
what do you think explains the level of interest?
First thing, let me just make a slight correction. It's in our research level gallery, which is on our lower level of the museum.
Lower level,
yeah,
sorry.
So we don't like to use the word basement. And I know it seems like it's maybe, but we've done a lot of work in kind of improving that. And it is kind of on the periphery, but it's located also with our Edward Jones Research Center. I think a lot of people just interested in just almost anything that we have to offer, and that there's quite a lot to see, but this is an important story to tell as well. And I think people in general like artwork, like to look at art and the way the war is told through art.
Well, let's talk about some of the art. The very first work of art you see has Red Cross nurses working on wounded soldiers with officers kind of milling about. And everyone's eyes, this is a detail about it that really caught my attention. Everyone's eyes, except the nurses, are made of lines, like little X's or slashes. But the nurses have like actual eyes with eyeballs and convey this more human quality because of that, I think. I mean, do you think that there is a sort of recurring theme there about sort of, I don't know, the inhumanity of war versus the humanity of the nurse?
I agree with that. There's that theme. Maybe with the soldiers or the patients, there's so many of them. We have a few quotes as part of the exhibit, and they really go over how overwhelming the work was because
yeah.
the number of patients, the number of wounded. And maybe it's just kind of like the men are almost faceless in that way, the soldiers and all. But the nurses have to stand out somehow, and therefore be more human in their appearance because they're just sort of the saviors or the the ones who are providing the assistance and to all these many nameless, if you will, you know, soldiers.
There are also a couple of prints where you see, you'll see like a single nurse standing with a single patient, and she's probably, you know, escorting this person to safety or something. But when you first look, it's almost like a couple is dancing or something. There's one where the guy is blindfolded and has a cane. You imagine that he's experienced some sort of trauma to his eye. And nobody's like looking especially chipper, but it's a sort of like floral scene and outdoors, right. And man and a woman hand in hand. And what do you think that... Is there something to that, like this idea that this is a woman cast in a particular kind of role?
I think there's something to that. There are those scenes. There are scenes within the whole exhibit of wards, patient wards. So again, kind of like the idea of a mass numbers of patients and casualties. But then there are those one-on-one scenes, just the various interactions of nurses with their patients. So I think that's what it's showing, how they interacted differently, and that sometimes they were probably they would be one-on-one and just trying to be more of a friend and have a closer relationship with a patient. And some of them are somewhat romanticized, as in they're kind of a romantic relationship you can read from looking at the artwork. So there's just, I guess there's just the human emotions that are involved that are being expressed in various ways.
There is a surprising kind of humor in one of the works in the exhibit that I want to touch on. I mean, it's definitely gallows humor, I would say, but with all of the levels of injury and the fallout of war, there's this one image of a guy with one leg, and he's saying, I mean, it's in French, but it translates as, all the same, it's kind of funny not having more than one leg.
Right. The piece. Yeah, he's a French soldier with. I think there are two pictures that are show amputees, and then just trying to, with the help of a nurse there by his side, overcoming that. That's just kind of expressing the reality of war, what can happen, various injuries, and one of them, lots were amputees, and what they'd have to deal with now, having a permanent disability. And what their life was going to be about, and getting used to that to start with, and psychologically used to it and physically used to it.
Tell me more about the role that nurses played in all of this. I mean, some of the specifics of World War I that give us a sense of what nurses were dealing with, and then how it is that nurses came to play the particular role they played. And nurses from all over the world.
Right. All the countries had nurses and had nursing organizations and all before the war. They were usually like volunteer organizations supporting the armed forces and supporting their efforts. But of course, that it grew hugely during the war. The need for nurses was just immense. The United States had its own Army Nurse Corps and Navy Nurse Corps and so forth, but we relied a lot on Red Cross nurses. Were predominantly most of the nurses came from the Red Cross, and that organization grew exponentially during the war. So all the belligerents had their nursing staffs, and they were obviously very needed for all kinds of things. And as I kind of alluded to earlier, they were not necessarily, they were near the front lines, not, again, they weren't in combat or something, but they were close as you could be, because they had to even be a part of removing the soldiers from the battle areas and tending to them right from the start at dressing stations and so forth. It just depended on the particular needs of the army or so of a different country, because Russia, the nurses were pretty much all in the field all the time and working with them. In the U.S., we had our nurses who were surgical teams working with what would be like the equivalent of a MASH hospital in the Korean War or something or later. But there was all kinds of...
And so those would be more removed from the battlefield a little bit?
They would be right at the front. I mean, particularly the Russian nurses and the U.S. ones, or any country that had these efforts where they really had to use them quite near the fighting, they would be close by. But then there was a whole apparatus, a whole chain of taking care of the patient from the battlefield down through various hospital settings to a place where if the patient had to recover back of the lines and maybe even be sent home for a severe disability or something.
Something I kind of remember from my history classes is that technology had changed war pretty dramatically by the time World War I arrived, and that kind of caught people by surprise, and the casualties, the level of injury, all of that was just something that hadn't been seen before. Is the way that nursing worked during this war different from previous wars as well?
It did. It had to adapt. It's mainly what you're talking about, the scale. There are lots of, huge losses from the start of the war, huge numbers of casualties. And that's why I said in the exhibit, even the quotes allude to just they were overwhelmed by this. Nursing had been a profession for 100 years or so before this, but they were involved in various conflicts in Europe and in the United States, the American Civil War and so forth. But it was just the scale of the losses. With everything World War I, it was just unprecedented in terms of scale.
With the women who showed up to be nurses, did they already work as nurses in some other capacity? Or was this their sort of indoctrination into the field?
A number of them were already registered nurses. They were already trained in schools and everything. And this would be for all countries. But then they needed, the call went out for more. So some came on as kind of had to be trained almost at the time. But they may have had some background working in a hospital or something and then had to be further trained, have advanced training. So you have different levels. You have the ones who were already nurses and had been working as such, and then ones that had to be trained right away. And then they brought in a lot of nurses, or they weren't nurses, they were called various things, but they were support staff, basically, to help out with the regular nurses. So
you mentioned these quotes that are on the wall, and they do give you a pretty vivid sense of what the nurses were dealing with. I'm curious, first, you must have poured through extensive research materials to get these kind of first-person accounts. Where did these come from?
There are three quotes. One of them came with the exhibit on loan. This came from it's a British woman who became a nurse in the Russian Red Cross, and we have her book. We have her war memoir in our library. The other two quotes are both nurses with the Army Nurse Corps, one serving with the British, and then one serving in a hospital in Paris. Those we have the actual collections of letters and memoirs and so forth and photographs. We have the actual primary source documents for those two collections, those two nurses. And so it was just a matter of going through the material and finding quotes and deciding what we want to use.
I want to talk to you about two of those quotes, and we'll get to the third later. But I also am really curious about some of the stuff that might not have made it in. Just this picture that you get of the day-to-day life of a nurse serving in this particular conflict. But we'll start with this one from Florence Fambro, a Red Cross nurse serving with the Russian army in Poland. She says, "At first we could cope. Then we were overwhelmed by their numbers. They came in the hundreds from all directions, some able to walk, others crawling, dragging themselves along the ground." What is it that conveys that you think is really significant?
Again, as I said, the numbers, just the overwhelming numbers of casualties due to the technology of the war, due to the massive armies, the technology, and all the killing, and all the wounding and everything, that it's just the numbers that they had to deal with, and they were probably really didn't have such a good idea. A lot of people, they didn't really know what the war was going to turn out to be, how long it was going to be, how destructive it was going to be. So they were prepared as much as possible. This is all countries, and then saying, well, you know, this thing is just out of hand almost from the start, and we are doing our best.
We also hear from Florence Edith Hemphill, an American Red Cross nurse serving in France. She says, "I'm now in a German prisoner ward, and they are just being fitted up with clothes to go home. I wish you could hear them. I suppose they are as glad to get home as our boys are. Most of them will never fight again, as most of them are just one arm or something else just as bad." I'm interested there that she's expressing a great deal of compassion for essentially the quote-unquote enemy.
Right. Well, that's – but I think that's probably common to nurses, common to a lot of people, actually, just saying, well, this is a terrible thing, and we're kind of in it together, even though we may be enemies. But I think at that time, it was the war had ended, and she was working with them after the armistice, after the war ended. But it's a common humanity theme, and just that I'm here to help. I'm trained to help people on whatever side that you're on.
Yeah, in war, I mean, there's such an us versus them. I mean, that's kind of the right. basic idea. But then in the medical field, there's this idea that a patient who is suffering needs help, regardless of who they are. Did nurses during World War I face a dilemma there? Did nursing kind of cross those lines?
They did. I would say in general that would have happened. There's a famous or infamous incident of a British nurse, Edith Cavell, who ran a clinic in Brussels. Had for years before the war started, had this clinic in Brussels. And helping out, had her patients and everything. The war started. She was British, and she decided to help people from both sides. So it was naturally she would kind of see herself as being with the Allies, being with the British and the French and the Belgians, and were helping those who came to her clinic. But she also helped German soldiers wounded who came to her clinic. And the whole episode that the Germans considered her that she was a spy. They called her that she was helping the Allies. She was helping to, in a way, send the soldiers back to their countries and helping them go through the Netherlands, a neutral country, to get them back into Britain or to France. So, but she was just seeing it as a way of just helping, again, being humane and practicing her profession and the principles of her profession and helping them out regardless of which side they're on. So that's the case that because of the notoriety it got, you always hear about. And she was executed in October of 1915 by the Germans as a spy, is what they considered her, and other charges. But I think all nurses, I just think in general that people would want to, with being trained in such a profession, would want to help, would want to be humane to if they had an opportunity, to whatever side.
To
any wounded person. I mean, obviously many thousands of wounded in various cases, and who knows, incidents could have happened of all kinds of things. But I just get the feeling that in general that there's this common humanity idea, and that they would help if they could help.
What about, I mean, you've just told the story of Edith Cavell. There's another story that's kind of alluded to in the promotional materials for the exhibit, Mary Chisholm and Elsie Knocker. I really love this story. Can you tell their story?
I'm not quite as familiar, though, with their story. So I won't be able to know. I just don't know it as well as some of the other things.
Oh, okay. Well, the basics of it seem to be that they were working for an official sort of like medical service area, like a camp. And it was too far from the battlefield for their taste because they felt that it would... that mostly they were getting people who had already died or were too far along
in their situation. Yeah.
So they sort of went rogue and set up their own little area near the front, and that they were on like motorbikes and, you know, gone off on their own to do this.
Right. That is something I know that there was a lot of, you read memoirs, you read accounts, and people really wanted to help. Again, given the scale of the war, given that it was, It took up everybody's life, really. I mean, all the countries involved, this was everything that was going on at the time was all directed toward the war, the war effort. So you can see people who volunteered, lots of thousands of volunteers who wanted to be a part of it in some way and to help out. So that there's a lot of examples, would be a lot of examples of people who did that, who just joined up to help one way or the other, and they wanted to be a part of this what was going on in history at the time.
I want to run all of this past our next guest, who's a nurse herself. She serves as a dean in UMKC's School of Nursing. Joy Roberts, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
What are you hearing that resonates here? I mean, I'm curious about whether you see continuity between the way that you hear about nurses' roles in World War One, and our culture's current idea of the role of a nurse in today's world, in civilian life?
Well, some things have changed and some things have stayed the same. Even as early as the Civil War, at least in the United States, the belief was that women had too delicate a constitution to be able to be involved in any sort of battlefield nursing or even in caring for soldiers, that only men could be military nurses. And that during the Civil War at its beginning was shown to be incorrect with the entry of Clara Barton, who was not an educated nurse, not a professional nurse. She was an educated lady who wanted to help, and she saw that really what was happening in the battles were that there was no care. A soldier would be injured. He would lay on the battlefield. He might get carted to what they used as a military or battlefield hospital. Maybe he would have his leg or arm wound guillotined in order to save his life, and then pretty much be put on a wagon or a train to the nearest city for help. And a lot of those people died. Plus, they didn't have enough equipment such as bandages or food for their soldiers. And so she found that if she showed up with food and bandages and assistance, things would get done.
So, but it seems like without the training, her role would have been primarily, you know, nurturing.
Actually, no. Not to say that she wasn't a particularly nurturing person, but she brought volunteers with her. Eventually, some were trained and some were not. But she was more about logistics and bringing the help to the soldier, but then also giving them care right on the battlefield or right at the rear of the battlefield, getting them immediate care and getting the soldiers the resources they needed to be able to survive. There was certainly some friction between the way Clara Barton managed things with nursing and the way Dorothea Dix, who at the time was the chief nurse for the Army, believed things should be done. The thing was, things hadn't been getting done before that time.
These stories from the battlefield of nurses, do any of the things that you sort of draw from those stories, the things that are motivating these women to get involved, to do the work they do, do they resonate with you as far as why you were drawn to the profession, why other people you know were drawn to the profession?
The urge to recognize in everyday people that you may not know the human relationships that make them very much like all the people you do know. And that seems to be a large part of the drive, including in being able to care for combatants, from opposing armies. Because in those people, you can see your fathers, your brothers, your uncles, your sons.
Do you think, on the other hand, that any of the ideas people might get from these stories could set up certain kinds of misconceptions about nursing?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And those misconceptions continue to exist.
Like what?
The angel, the heroine, that nursing is a calling versus the recognition that modern-day nursing requires a strong background in science and in critical thinking.
And just skill.
Yes.
Well, I want to read you a quote from the World War One Museum's exhibit that we haven't already talked about. This is from a woman named Alta Mae Andrews, an Army Nurse Corps member serving in France. She says, "My ward was completely filled again last night, and many cases are desperately ill. How can one nurse do justice to 70 horribly wounded men is beyond me, beyond my comprehension. One couldn't believe that it is possible to accomplish so much in 12 hours. You are just everywhere at once, but oh, what satisfaction in knowing that you are really needed, really helping." Does that resonate with nursing today?
Oh, yes, even still, although fortunately, these days, it's not a ratio of 70 patients to one nurse.
What is closer to a realistic ratio?
In a hospital, in a general setting, general medical surgical setting, it would be more like one nurse to six to seven patients. In critical care situations, it's one nurse to perhaps two, sometimes just one-on-one. In military battle situations, it would be likely one-on-one.
Do you think that there are other ways? I mean, you talked about the misconception of the angel or the nursing as a calling. We've also talked about some things that come out of this history that we've discussed that are very real and very with us today. This idea of someone who sees the humanity in a stranger and wants to help, or someone who is driven to perform under incredible circumstances, ratios of nurses to patients, etc. How do you think that the fact that this profession in some ways grew up out of the brutality of wartime as kind of a bastion of compassion affects the way we do think about nurses and maybe even the way nurses think about themselves?
Well, of course, in the recruiting for nurses in almost all military actions, they have played on the compassion, and in so doing, they have advertised to the public that this is what nurses are. They're these loving, caring women who want to help. And so that has affected tremendously society's perception of nursing.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we want to hear from you. If you are a nurse, what inspires you about your profession, and what do you think people might not really get about who you are and what it is you do? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. This conversation about nursing continues when we return. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. We're back. Later in the show, we'll revisit the last night of business for Kansas City's Record Bar. But for now, we're talking about the really intense wartime origins of nursing and how that history shapes the profession as we know it today. Our guests are Joy Roberts of UMKC's School of Nursing and Jonathan Casey, the Archivist and Research Center Manager for the National World War One Museum. I'm Gina Kaufman, and you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Joy, what inspired you to get into nursing? What's the story there?
I get asked that a lot. And actually, I went to college with a scholarship to study biochemistry, which I did for 3 years. And while I was working in a pathology lab, I was surrounded by biochemists who said, well, you know, I'm not going to be stuck here in a lab for the rest of my life. And I started thinking, I do like being around people a lot, so maybe this is not the job for me. And a thought popped up in my head that said, you need to go to nursing school. So I changed my major to nursing and have never regretted it.
At what point in your formation as a nurse did you become captivated with the history of your profession? I mean, fairly unprompted, you just told us so much about the history of nursing in this country in the Civil War.
Actually, it wasn't while I was in nursing school. It was in third grade when I started reading lots of biographies. And one person I read a biography about was Clara Barton. And I sort of ran amok from there.
So you identified with her as a third grader, do you think?
Oh, yeah, probably so. She was very independent, very adventurous, and did not want to hear the word no, or would find a way around the word no.
What is it that you love about these stories? I mean, it's clear that you do love these stories.
I love to hear the stories from nurses who, particularly military nurses or nurses who were working in public health, particularly in the United States. And what's inspiring about them is because these stories show what women did to better health care for everyone in the country, whether it was within tenements in New York City or whether it was on the battlefield. And their contributions very much are overlooked.
You know, are there other chapters in the history of nursing that we should be paying attention to in this conversation?
Well, there are many, many chapters in the history of nursing. It did start for quite a while as a profession for men.
Which is so interesting because we distinctly culturally tend to think of it as the opposite now.
Right. Well, several hundred years ago, nursing orders started taking over, or religious orders, excuse me, started taking over nursing. And there are still nursing orders today. Both men and women belong to these religious orders. And so nursing was done by nuns and members of the religious orders. And that's where it started being linked to females. Then it was also that people took care of their ill relatives in their homes because there wasn't too much a person could do if someone was dying of an infection. There were no medications or anything to treat it. So people took care of their families in their homes, and death and dying was a part of living. And then gradually people got the belief that hospitals were a place just to go to die, and that anyone who worked at a hospital caring for sick people who weren't their relatives must be suspect.
Suspect in what way?
Someone desperate for money. Someone from the street who was willing to do whatever it took to be able to have enough money to buy food. And so it certainly wasn't a profession that that a woman should be in. That was something that impoverished people, prostitutes, inmates did, was care for sick people.
And was the suspect part of it sort of like, if you're doing this for financial desperation, then you might not have the kind of care for the patient that would be ideal? Is that the idea?
No. It was just that they thought just that low people would be the only ones willing to do the job. And so when Florence Nightingale decided that she wanted to help, again, soldiers, and become a nurse, her family, very well-to-do family, said, you know, good heavens, no. That's no job for a lady of any standing. And she did it anyway and got her friends to do it. And that's where we started seeing the professionalization of nursing.
How are things for male nurses today? We played a clip earlier in the show from the movie Meet the Fockers, where Ben Stiller plays a nurse. And throughout the movie, the guy is constantly being sort of mocked by people who think it's funny that he's a nurse and not a doctor, because there is something about our culture that conditions us to see doctors as men and nurses as women.
Yes, there certainly is. And things are better now for men in nursing. And we are gradually seeing an increase in the United States in men who are nurses. But we still only have about 10 or 12% of all registered nurses are men. And we need more men in the profession. Do they get teased or given a hard time by people? Some do, not as much as perhaps 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, when people were somewhat surprised. But it is still very typical that they go in and give care and people presume they're a physician.
Let's hear from one of our callers. We've got Michael on the line from outside of Lawrence. Hi, Michael.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. So hey, you are a nurse, right?
I'm a nurse, and actually I'm a male nurse. And, you know, I think my take is that anytime you either make somebody more comfortable or save their life, they don't necessarily care what your gender is. You know, I'm also about 6'4 and 200 pounds, so with a great big beard, I don't know how many people really make fun of me for being a nurse, but in practice, nobody ever really complained if you know, they have untreated pain that gets treated, or if, you know, they need an emergent measure to save their life, you know, or just standard care. I mean, preserving your dignity, preserving the patient's dignity, I think kind of transcends any gender problems, you know, that I run into. I'm a hospice nurse. I don't see so much of that in my practice, or people aren't real vocal with me about it.
What did you call in to share, Michael?
Well, it's a little late, and I hate to change the subject to
no, what please.
It is, but it was about a calling, you know, the calling why people are a nurse. And I always felt it was very, I definitely like being a nurse, but I think that there is a role that your patient expects you to have everything 100% together, you know, in every aspect of your life. And, you know, nurses have, you know, internal struggles or demons or whatever you have. And I know one of the things that keeps me going is that, it sounds very self-serving, but oftentimes I think my rewards, that I feel from people that are grateful, do so much for me, you know, and that's, I think a big reason why I'm still a nurse, you know, you hate to sound like you're in it for yourself, you know what I mean? Because, you know, ultimately you're not, but the rewards that I've felt, you know, just reciprocity of emotion are so much better than any kind of monetary gains I ever get. So I think that's definitely why, you know, I didn't wake up one morning and say, hey, you know, I'm Florence Nightingale, but I definitely was surprised how rewarding it was just to help my own kind of turmoil or struggles, you know, so... I get a lot from people, you know, feeling better, I guess is what it is, or helping them die with dignity, or helping them maintain their dignity, you know, as a hospice nurse. So, but anyway, that's all I wanted to share. I appreciate you guys taking my call.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you so much. I'm interested in something he said there, which is that people as a nurse expect you to have everything together. What do you think that's about, Joy?
Well, one thing that I found years ago in a practice that I had in a small town in Northwest Missouri as a nurse practitioner was that I had noticed that I had patients who were coming to me not just with their health issues, but they would come and start asking me about all other kinds of issues in their lives, financial or what have you. And I asked our office coordinator about this, because she was from the town, and she said that's because they view you as a very knowledgeable friend. And it is true, the patients very often will think, this isn't just someone who's taking care of me, who's educated as a nurse, and that's it. They start to view you as a friend who is more educated about things than themselves, and they start asking questions about all manner of things. And so they do tend to believe that, you must have it all together because you have all these answers.
Talk to me about the relationship between doctors and nurses and how the general public views their roles versus maybe the reality of their roles as you see them.
Well, it is a problem somewhat how the general public receives their information about what physicians do and what nurses do, because it seems like the public receives their information, particularly about nursing, based on what they see on TV in medical dramas or medical sitcoms. And in those, nurses are never featured or extremely rarely featured. And then when they are, it's really only as either someone handing things to people or pushing a patient around, never showing them doing the things that nurses do. And in fact, instead, they tend to show, these TV shows tend to show physicians doing actual nursing duties.
Let's talk quickly to Catherine in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for joining us. What did you want to share?
Yes, I am a registered nurse who's now retired, who used to teach nursing history. And I wanted to comment that Clara Barton was on the Union side, but the Confederates had many, many women who volunteered and did a wonderful job as, though untrained, they did wonderful organizing, such as BDH Timber, ran Chimborazo Hospital in Richmond, which had 5,000 beds as a matron. And then there was Captain Sally Tompkins, the only woman who held a commission in the Confederate Army, who ran her own private hospital in Richmond, Virginia, which had an excellent, excellent rate of cure.
Catherine, what do these stories mean to you? I mean, you are a nurse.
Well, I'm also Army Nurse Corps veteran, and what the story means is that we can't lax up. We have to keep recruiting the very best and the brightest to nursing. It can't be that they come to nursing because, well, they decided that it was the only thing they could do or whatever. We have to get the best and the brightest because we are the ones with the patients the most at the bedside or on the battlefield. We are the ones who are there.
You know, are there challenges, Joy, to recruiting the best and brightest to the field of nursing?
Well, there have been sporadically throughout the years. Right now, and for the past probably 10 years, we have actually had more applicants to schools of nursing than we have spaces for them, which is a lovely problem to have. But we are able to get top-notch applicants. In the past, in the late 80s when I was in nursing school, there were very few people who were going into nursing, in part because where in the 60s and 70s, women's options for jobs generally were education, nursing, or being a secretary. When all of these other paths opened up, nursing dropped off as a preference. And in when I was at the University of Missouri, we had space for 50 in our class, but we only had 29 students in our class.
Joy, do you think that the reality of nursing with it, just within the medical landscape is changing faster in some ways than our culture's perception of it?
Absolutely. It is. We now are in an era of expanded practice for nursing. What people, when they think of a nurse, generally think of is a nurse in the hospital. And yet here, your callers are showing we have one who is a nurse in hospice. So that is taking care of terminally ill patients, very often in their home setting. You've heard from a former nursing faculty, but also we have nurses who provide primary health care, who provide public health, and we are moving back toward a focus in health of the public.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Joy Roberts. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Jonathan Casey, with us from the National World War I Museum. In working with the materials for this exhibit that you guys have on nurses during World War I, is there anything that you stumbled upon in your research and preparation for this exhibit that really stands out to you that maybe didn't make it in there, but that you think you'd like to talk about a little?
My research for this really was for the looking at the two collections I've alluded to with Florence and with Ultima Andrews, and kind of looking really for the first time at her collection, Ultima's, and the memoir she had is a pretty extensive memoir, and just reading about what her life was like as a nurse in France, in Paris, and the conditions that they were under because of wartime conditions, and describing things just kind of those experiences, as well as besides her nursing experiences, but just as she was as a person, just caught up in the whole war of it, you know, and the whole experience of the war. And all this, I want to say that if someone would like to do research on any of this, it's they can contact me and set up an appointment and to look at the materials, you know, and so I welcome that.
Well, the second battlefield, Nurses in the First World War, is at the National World War I Museum through March 6th. Coming up, we'll pay homage to the last hurrah at the Record Bar in Westport, an audio postcard from New Year's weekend. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned.